Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Medicine of Mindset Summit stage. Dr. Eric Robbins, and I'm excited to hear what Dr. Robbins has to share with us today. We actually have a common colleague and friend, Deanna Hansen, who is also featured on this summit. And so it's amazing once you start getting to know like-minded people, how your network just drastically expands. And so I'm excited to have both of them on the summit and we get a chance to spend some time with Dr. Eric today. Let me introduce him to you and then I'm going to turn things over to him. So he is an internationally renowned expert in mind-body medicine, featured in the New York Times best-selling series, The Tapping Solution, and in Soul Medicine, Awakening Your Inner Blueprint for Abundant Health and Energy. He is the author of the foreword to many books, and maybe some of you have these books in your own library, including The Tapping Solution for Pain Relief, Tap Into Balance, Tapping, Transform Your World, The Secret Language of Feelings, Life is the Perfect System. Oh my gosh, and I love this one, Super Brain Yoga, Miracles Through Pranic Healing, really, you know, Flowing Zen, the list goes on and on. This amazing human being has done a lot for society already. He is the co-author of the highly acclaimed books, Your Hands Can Heal You and The Power of Prana, and a contributing author of both Dr. David Burchelli's book, Shake It Off Naturally, and Dr. Dawson Church's The Heart of Healing. I'm actually right now reading Dr. Church's book, Bliss Brain. So I'm excited about that. Dr. Robbins is a board certified urologist in private practice and affiliated with a major hospital in the Los Angeles area. He sees patients regionally for chronic pelvic pain and other refractory and functional disorders. And he really does his best to integrate both allopathic medicine as well as complementary healing modalities. And we're going to get into this a little bit today. He received his MD from Baylor College of Medicine in 1989, his BA in biology from the University of Texas in Austin, and he completed his urology training at LA County USC Medical Center in 1995. So he's put in the time, ladies and gentlemen. He is an expert and he knows his stuff. And Dr. Eric, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to turn the virtual stage over to you. We've got a PowerPoint that really is going to set the stage for the conversation that we're going to get into after.
Deanna, thanks so much for having me. And when you sent me the invite, just the topic of this sounds so amazing. And as you know, there's so many folks out there that just aren't really being helped with the standard allopathic approach. And so it's nice to have, like you said, a bigger toolbox and some out-of-the-box ways to approach things. And the other thing I always say is that you don't really become a mind-body healing expert if you've had an easy life. So some of my early challenges kind of propelled me into this. So as you mentioned, I have a slideshow and I'll just launch into that. If I could get this to advance. Let me see, Jan. Okay, I think I could do that here. Okay, so a little bit about my background. As you said, I'm a board certified urologist, and I'm also a chronic pelvic pain specialist. I see cases referred to me regionally from all throughout Southern California. And it's not just about chronic pain. You know, I see when people kind of started seeing me get results with some of these very challenging patients, they'd send me the chronic fatigues and fibromyalgias, and you know, every medical center has these patients that are frequent flyers that are hospitalized for days and weeks at a time and have million-dollar workups, and nobody can really figure out what's going on. And so a lot of those end up making it my way. And I like to combine the best of allopathic medicine. When folks come to me, of course, we always do the medical standard of care. The challenge is that a lot of folks are sent to me that have already seen really good physicians and they've checked off all the boxes. And so at that point, we kind of have to do something else for them. I had to get good at this stuff, and it's really because my life depended on it, as I'll share with you. I grew up in a family where my mother was kind of sick in bed for my earliest, you know, recollections. She had what we probably call now chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and my younger sister had all those as well. I had chronic fatigue syndrome for at least 30, 35 years. And really bad brain fog. And I remember we'd start like these 36-hour on-call shifts in residency. And like we'd come in at 7 in the morning and you'd be there all day and all night and most of the next day. And like at 10 a.m. on the first day, I was already just exhausted. And it took every bit of will I had just to kind of keep my eyelids open. So, and then in about 1997, I just kind of collapsed. Like I hit a wall in practice now. And I just wasn't moving forward in my life and my relationships and my job and my health. And I remember seeing this famous bioenergetic psychologist, and he said, "Eric, you're getting by on 3%. And, you know, I can look back now and say that absolutely is true. I mean, 97% of my, whatever you want to call it, life force was locked up, blocked up. And so I was kind of looking for ways to help myself. I tried some things that helped then, but not enough. In 2014, 2014 was interesting because I had about the 6-month period of these worsening neurologic symptoms. I mean, I had weird twitches of my body and I couldn't feel the hot water in my hands. And I started having actually really significant cognitive things going on. Like I was having trouble thinking and my mind was kind of a sieve. And that was, of course, very worrisome. And then I noticed that I was starting to have like GI symptoms. Like if I ate after 7 p.m., I'd wake up the next morning, the food would still be undigested on my stomach. And then the straw that broke the camel's back was I was in the office one day and my heart started just racing at 220 beats a minute. I was getting dizzy and lightheaded and got taken to the ER for that. And I was in the hospital and I was almost non-functional at that point, really thinking like, how can I continue working? And the hospitalist came by my room and he said something, and I can assure you it was not like 1/10,000th of the clarity that I now understand this stuff, but I kind of got the idea, I'm stuck in a fight, flight, freeze, stress state. My physiology stuck there. And then I immediately had the intuition. It's like, even though we say the body tends to heal itself, it does not heal very well when we're stuck in a chronic stress physiology. And I knew, because I'm kind of in the business, that there's not really much we can do in standard medicine to get folks out of that. And so I was fervently looking for answers and praying, and I came across some stuff that, well, that's why I'm here with you today. So, but because I had to study so much of this stuff to literally save my own life, I've kind of, you know, developed a series of mind-body principles that helped me and have helped a lot of my patients. So I'm going to share some of those with you in the audience today. Okay. Mind-body healing principle number one is this: when we experience events in our lives that are stressful or terrifying or too overwhelming to deal with at the time, we'll lock those memories and emotions into our muscles in the fascia, literally hold them in the body. And it's a protective mechanism. It holds the traumas inside and prevents these uncomfortable feelings and memories from coming up to our conscious awareness to bother us. One of Sigmund Freud's most famous students was a guy named Wilhelm Reich, and he studied the body and body energies, and he called this muscular armoring, or another name for it was character structure. And it was really interesting. So let's talk about this Reichian armoring for a minute. So again, it's one major way that traumatic memories are repressed and held outside of conscious awareness. They're held in the body. And these chronically tensed areas in the body can of course cause pain and rigidity, and they just use up a lot of our bandwidth. You know, they use up a lot of our energy. In my opinion, these areas of myofascial constriction of the body are the major cause of blocked energy pathways and meridians in our body. And, you know, it's so interesting because people go to an energy healer and they might use their hands or a Reiki therapist to try and unblock the energy. Or, of course, people go to an acupuncturist and they put needles in the meridians to try and get the energy to flow. And that's fantastic. The higher level question to me was always, why are those pathways blocked to begin with? You know? And I think it's these traumas that are held in the myofascia that are a huge, account for a huge proportion of that. These myofascial contractions, they limit our mental and emotional range and expression and kind of the size of our container. People talk about a stress bucket or something, and we'll talk about that later, but they affect all those things. Okay. Now, what's interesting is that when we start to release these areas of chronic myofascial contraction and armoring, what may come up to our conscious awareness are the same uncomfortable memories, emotions, and sensations that caused us to freeze to begin with. So I want to share an interesting story. I had, again, I see pelvic pain a lot. I had two different young women that came in at various times, maybe in their 20s. One woman had severe vaginismus. And for your audience, that means the pelvic floor and vaginal muscles are tense and tight and spastic. It's hard to introduce anything in the vagina, whether a tampon or, you know, sexual intercourse. The other woman, her pelvic floor was so tight, she'd sit on the toilet and it would take 5 to 10 to 15 minutes for that muscle to relax enough where she could urinate. And if you can imagine trying to work or go to school, that was like a big, taking up a lot of her time. So, and neither patient, I asked them, really had any idea what might have happened to cause this problem, and asked them repeatedly. And so I taught them a technique called TRE, stands for tension and trauma release exercises. We'll talk a lot more about this a little later, but it induces a shaking, shivering, tremoring in the body, in the muscles, and it gets these muscles to relax and unfreeze. And both of them, after a very short TRE session, all of a sudden, the cause of why these muscles were tight came up to their conscious awareness. It was amazing because I had just asked them about it. So one woman remembered a date rape that somehow she never could remember before. And the other one remembered something kind of that happened with her dad that, you know, you can kind of guess what happened there. So, and then as we learned to handle those, the emotional content of what came up, the muscles were able to stay relaxed. And then it's magnificent work. So as we learn to kind of navigate this, release the myofascia, be able to deal with what comes up emotionally as a result of that, we really get a lot more freedom in our lives, and our neurologic stress threshold gets larger. I studied a little bit of somatic experiencing. That's that was developed by Dr. Peter Levine. And it's interesting because I did some of their training. It's great. And read a bunch of his books. And really, if you were to distill a lot of what he says into one line, which he does, he said, the key is uncoupling fear from raw sensation. Because a lot of times we'll release the myofascia and it may just be, there's a feeling inside I don't like, it's making me anxious. There may not even be much content to it. And if we can learn to be with those sensations and uncouple fear from them, there's a tremendous amount of healing that can happen there. All right. Mind-body healing principle number two. So I assume most of your audience is familiar with the ACEs, the ACE study. And if not, I'll just give a brief introduction. So ACEs stand for Adverse Childhood Experiences. There was a big study in 1997 showing that the more adverse childhood experiences someone had, the more disease and early death and heart disease and lung disease and liver disease and cancer and depression and anxiety and addictive behaviors folks had. And so if you understand that the ACE study was true, it's accurate, that's actually something that happens. And then you reverse engineer it and say, how is it possible that these early childhood stressors affect our health later on? There's some understandings that come from that. And by the way, there's, I think, been 2,000 or 3,000 papers written about the ACE study since then. So it really is a thing. So this is what we know. We know that early childhood stressors essentially program how our physiology is going to run, sometimes for the rest of our lives. Okay, it programs how the physiology is going to run. A big part of this is something called limbic system dysfunction. And it means that we, you know, the limbic system is kind of like the fear center of our brain. So if there's limbic system dysfunction, it's as if we get easily triggered into a fight, flight, freeze, stress state. And for many of us, it's almost like it's running on autopilot. That's definitely what was happening to me back in 2014. I would say that most of the cases of complex chronic illnesses have some component of limbic system dysfunction. And we're talking about things like chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and chronic Lyme infection. And now post-COVID's a big one. A lot of the autoimmune diseases, a lot of the gut things and irritable bowel syndromes and dysautonomies and POTS. There's a big component of limbic system dysfunction. By the way, I'm going to say something. It's my opinion. I think it's probably going to turn out to be accurate. And that's this. These areas of myofascial constriction and contraction in our body, I think, you know, our mind is constantly reading our body. I think those are going to turn out to be a big trigger to keep our limbic system stuck going in a dysfunctional state. Like our mind's checking in, oh God, this person's tense, this air's tense, we're not safe, we better stay in a fight or flight state. You know, and it's interesting, as I kind of, as I said before, like, even though we say the body tends to heal itself, it really does not heal very well when we're locked in a chronic stress physiology. Okay. Some of your audience may have seen this. This is the Porges polyvagal model. I love the slide, and hopefully when I'm done here to, in a few minutes explaining it, you will too. So Stefan Porges came up with something called the polyvagal model, and this thing explains so much. So basically, if you can see my mouse down here, this green arrow in the bottom, it says social engagement. So most of you have heard that when we're in a kind of a healthy state, it's a ventral vagal state, it's a parasympathetic state, it's a rest and digest and restore state, and that's really where the body heals the best. It's a healthy physiology. And by the way, when we're in this state, they also call it a state of social engagement. That's kind of interesting, because it kind of means that, like, how we act around others and how we're feeling is kind of reflective of our underlying physiology. Okay, when we're in a state of social engagement, we might feel emotions like joy and feeling very present and grounded, and there's a sense of curiosity and openness and compassion and mindfulness. Okay, and conversely, if people aren't feeling those things, we probably know that their physiology is not in this state most of the time. As a quick aside, I always laugh because sometimes you see these motivational speakers get up, they say, just have a sense of curiosity. And it sounds great, and it probably is good. But if your physiology is somewhere else, it's really hard to actually in real life have that you know, childlike curiosity. Okay, now take a look here at my mouse, if you can see it, my cursor. This says arousal increases. And if you just change that word to stress, we're going to see what happens as the stress increases. We may go into a fight or flight state, which is a sympathetic nervous system state. And even here, you know, fight and flight are kind of two different things. Like if I'm fighting, maybe I'm moving towards the threat. I'm angry, I'm rage, I want to fight you. If I'm fleeing, I'm kind of trying to get away from the threat. And that may be more of the emotions of like fear and anxiety and worry and concern. Okay. Some people spent a lot of their time in the sympathetic state, and our curve is going up here. So as the stress increases more, and you see this word overwhelm, if we get to a place where we're just overwhelmed, like something's happening, maybe something's happened to a little kid and they may not be able to fight or flee, sometimes we'll freeze. Now, freeze is back to a parasympathetic state. Down, social engagement down here is a ventral vagal. Freeze is a dorsal vagal. It's another branch of the vagus nerve. And that's really what one of the things that Porges just pointed out. I think most med students don't really even get this physiology. It's very factual, but I don't think they really understand it in a usable way. Now, when we're in a dorsal vagal state, some of the emotions that are associated with that are things like people might be disassociated, a brain fog, numbness, depression, helpless, hopeless, shame, we're shut down, prepared for death, we feel trapped. So this is where I spent 30 years of my life in freeze. I know it really well. Okay. Now, this is very interesting. Look at this slide. So we're in freeze and we want to unfreeze. It's bad to be stuck in a physiologic freeze. Bad, you're sick, it doesn't feel good. So as we start to unfreeze and we start coming down this curve, unfortunately, we don't magically go from freeze to social engagement. We have to come back through fight or flight. And that can be a challenge because as people are frozen and we start to unfreeze them, they may start having some kind of strong emotions come up. There may be anger or rage. It might be a lot of fear and anxiety. And unless you can step back and look at our map and say, actually, I'm on the right track. You know, sometimes people freeze again. That's kind of what happens with PTSD. Folks start to unfreeze, these strong emotions come up and they may freeze again. But if we can stick with it and go slow, and have someone maybe work with us and hold a safe neurologic container for us, and we can make it down through here and then uncouple fear from sensation, we end up back more often than not in this ventral vagal state. And that's where the healing happens, literally, physically, and emotionally. And so I love this pictorial. And have you seen that one before, by the way, Jenna?
You know, I had not. I mean, it, and I love, obviously, the pieces of it make so much sense, the way it's put together. And I hope our audience can understand that I don't want to oversimplify what it depicts, because when you're in the middle of it, it's, you know, like, it's like the sky is crumbling, right? Yet it shows such a clear way out. It doesn't mean it's a get out of jail, you know, a hall pass, or, you know, in Monopoly, get out of jail free card. There is work that has to happen to get back into that parasympathetic, but I appreciate how you presented that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and so the Porges polyvagal model, kind of exactly like you said, it kind of provides a map for folks to know where they are now and what stages they need to go through. And you're exactly right. When you're in the middle of it, it doesn't feel good for sure, but at least to be able to stand back and say, you know, I'm in the right direction. It may not seem that way or feel that way, but I am, can be really helpful. Interestingly, talking about the vagus nerve, the science shows that 80% of vagal fibers are afferent, meaning they're coming from the body and sending a message to the brain, and only about 20% of vagal fibers are efferent, which is the brain telling the body what to do. So I think so often, you know, I so often say that a large percentage of our thoughts and emotions are actually, and mindset, are coming from the body and the physiology. And I think this is just kind of one way of saying that. So much of how we think and feel is our interoception. We may not be aware that someone asks us, hey, do you want to go hang out with me and have coffee tonight? In a millionth of a second, our brain goes down, checks our body, checks the gut, checks the heart, checks the pelvic brain, checks the status of the myofascia, all that, and then gives you an answer. And you may not be aware you did all that, but yeah, people are intercepting. They're going and checking inside their body and then deciding an answer to whatever. So
can I interrupt you for a second there?
Yes.
I think it's really important here what you have said, and I want our audience to understand that, I mean, whether you call it your gut feeling, your intuition, I love that you've brought this up, because I think for so long we've discounted that and we got stuck in what is going on in the brain. What do I think versus what do I feel? And what you're saying here is 80% of those, you know, the vagus nerve, that cranial nerve that goes from the brain to all of our organs, that wandering nerve, 80% of it is, you know, is going from the body up to the brain versus 20 from the brain down. Like that's another really cool way of, you know, that the classic 80-20 rule that you kind of just flipped on its head. So thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I think the science is going to show us that more and more, you know. And I was presenting kind of this type of stuff at a medical school last week, and med students obviously are very bright, but, you know, all of us, I mean, doctors, we're in our head and thinking logical, and there's a role for that. And there's also a role for coming back to our body and trusting our gut and our intuition. So, you know, this summit you're hosting is all about mindset. And I really do think to think better, feel better, we need to start shifting our physiology. That's at least a big part of it. There's certainly a merit to top-down approaches as well as bottom-up approaches. All right. Mind-body healing principle number 3. And I want to give credit to one of my mentors, Bill Harris, for this. Bill started some company called CenterPoint, and they developed this binaural beat technology, and the product's called HoloSync. That, for me, was really life-changing. In fact, I'd say at the time, you know, I was getting by on 3%, and I probably got, you know, 5 times better, which meant I was now operating on 15%. That may not seem like a lot, but going from 3% to 15%, I felt like Superman. Bill was really a genius at taking complex ideas and topics and simplifying them and maybe turning them into a metaphor. Again, I'd say even if I'm teaching, when I speak to other doctors or students, I love just talking metaphors because people will remember this stuff for a long time. So Bill came up with the plate theory. And what it means is this, you know, all of us have heard that expression, my plate is full, right? And so the idea of it is that for all of us, our nervous systems are like a cup or a plate, and we can only handle so much stuff, it's a great word, coming at us from life before we get the plate, cup or plate gets too full. When our plate gets too full, when our nervous system gets pushed over this threshold, it kind of creates this in generic stress or anxiety reaction. And then we all learn to cope with this differently depending on how we learn to respond as kids. So, for example, some people isolate themselves, want to just be left alone. Some people are angry or anxious or depressed. Some, many of us probably, you know, engage in any one of a number of addictive behaviors, you know. But the bottom line is all these reactions are secondary to being pushed over threshold. That's number one. The second thing, and I think the science backs this up, is that traumas, and particularly early traumas, even the stresses we pick up when we're in utero in the womb, if our mom's stressed, these traumas literally affect the development of our nervous systems in such a way that we can have very small plates. So one of the reasons I'm good at this is that I was walking around my whole life and my plate was like the size of a thimble. You can imagine how that is. And you can be a smart person and a nice person, good heart. But listen, if you're walking around a stress threshold the size of a thimble, life is going to push you over really, really easily and quickly. Another one of my mentors, a guy named Gay Hendricks, he's a body-centered psychotherapist, also came up with something called the upper limits problem, which is, you know, we all get how bad things and negative things and stresses fill up our plate, for sure. But Gay said, if you have a small plate, then even seemingly good or positive things can feel bad and we may self-sabotage, you know. And he used to give some examples like a couple's going to go away on a romantic 3-day weekend, and right before they leave, you know, a fight breaks out. And on one level of truth, she could say, yeah, he was being blah, blah, blah. And he could say she was being this and that. But probably at a higher level of truth, we'd say the fight had to break out to kind of limit the amount of positive energy, or, you know, like someone gets sick before going on a vacation. So those are examples of that. So how do we help folks to heal? All right. So the paradigm shift is, you know, what if we gave folks a bigger plate, a larger neurologic stress threshold, so they could handle more stuff coming at them from life without being triggered into a stress physiology? Like what if, you know, I was able to get my thimble from this big to a 64 ounce big gulp. Like, you can function a lot better in life like that. And so we get a bigger plate using both a top down and bottoms up approaches. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that now. Is our pace okay, Jana? We doing okay here?
Yeah, we're great.
Okay, all right. Okay, so top-down approaches. And by the way, some of these things I'm listing probably actually are bottoms up too, so there's not clear-cut categories. But basically, tapping, you know, meridian tapping is a big one. There's a lot of studies behind that showing its efficacy. You know, I always think, like, if you're plate small to begin with, and there's all these big, highly emotionally charged memories that are still in you, in your system, in your musculature, whatever, and you start clearing the charge off those with something like tapping, it's fantastic. Okay. I'm actually, one of my proudest claims to fame is I think I was the first Western physician to endorse EFT back in the day. Tapas acupressure technique, it should say acupressure. Tapas acupressure technique, TAT, is another big one. I use that a lot in my office. If I know there's a trauma, to start diffusing the emotional charge off that and kind of just freeing up the energy for folks. EMDR, you know, eye movement desensitization is really good, and I think is pretty evidence-based now. There's a lot of talk about limbic system training. Folks like Joe Dispenza talk about it. My recent experience has been that folks that are really chronically sick, we said earlier, folks that are really chronically sick probably have some limbic system dysfunction, and there's ways to retrain that. And there's several different schools. One school that just I personally am enamored with and I'm studying right now is Dr. Kathleen King's Primal Trust. She's a physical therapist. She herself was very sick and in bed for 10 or 15 years. You know, if she's inhaled one mold spore, I mean, she'd be, you know, bedridden for another day. And she managed to heal herself. She had studied a lot of functional neurology as part of her PhD program and kind of didn't think it applied to her, and then until she realized that it did. But she actually, her school involves a lot of top-down and bottoms-up. So that's just something I personally have used and like a lot. Internal family systems is great. I personally had some of those therapies myself and found them helpful. Of course, mindfulness and meditation are great. Lately, I've kind of been playing around with Scott Killaby's repression inquiries and have been very impressed with those as well. Okay, as far as bottoms up approaches, starting with the body, there's the fields of somatic psychotherapy, There's Qigong. Interestingly, Peter Levine and Bessel van der Kolk, of course, Bessel wrote How the Body Keeps the Score. And I think it's been on like the number one lit book at Amazon forever and ever. They both say Qigong is great. Bioenergetics and Reiki and breathwork are good, and they help kind of break down that muscular armoring. Of course, you can more directly go in and get myofascial release. I think Jana yourself and myself both like block therapy a lot as a novel. Yeah, there's your block there. There's your block therapy block. Hey, very briefly, if I have very limited space in my suitcase when I'm traveling, and it's like, you know, leave something behind, the block travels with me in my suitcase. And it used to be whenever I'd go through the X-ray machine at the airport, the TSA agents thought it's a block of, I don't know, cocaine or whatever. And they'd always look at it. Lately, I've been through the airport, these guys recognize the block now. So I say, you really...
And I had the same experience in the early days, and I tried to explain it a few times. And then, you know what I started doing? Funny, not funny. I started saying, it's what I use to release my pelvic floor. And then nobody said any other questions. They're like, okay. And then they put it back in my, in my carry on. They're like, we don't want to know about your women's health stuff, lady. Keep on walking. So yeah, I agree. The block is a must tool while traveling.
Yes, yes, yes. Love it. Love it. It really helps get it in deeply and release the stuff. It releases stuff that you didn't even know was there too. That's probably in your experience too. Yeah. Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah. So, you know, other bottoms up approaches are things like yoga, dance, Hanna somatics, etc. I saved, in my opinion, one of the best for last, and that's TRE, which is the tension and trauma release exercises. They were developed by Dr. David Berselli. Jan, have you done TRE before?
No. I was going to ask. So are you going to kind of practice a little bit?
Yes, there? Yes, yes. Okay. I definitely am. Yeah. Okay. All right. So just to be clear, the TREs are what cured me. They are what cured me of the chronic fatigue. I'm going to say something a little esoteric here, but I also had something that I think might've been akin to like a Kundalini syndrome. That's a weird spiritual thing, but where there's a lot of energy flowing and it's getting stuck, and had that for a number of years and tried everything. And TREs helped me, not help me, they cured that as well. So at any rate, TRE. So I'll tell you a little bit about them. So usually how I'll just kind of share with you how I explain in the office. So, and by the way, usually I'm explaining this to folks in the office who see me, they've got some chronic condition that's not healing despite the best we can do in allopathic medicine. And it kind of seems to me that their physiology is probably stuck in a chronic fight, flight, freeze, stress state, and they ain't going to heal that well unless we undo that. So I usually say something like, you know, have you ever seen on TV or YouTube the lion chasing the gazelle? And most people, of course, can relate to that. I say, you know, the gazelle is literally running for its life. Its body's in a high level of fight or flight, obviously. But what's interesting is that the gazelle escapes and gets to a safe place. And it won't do this unless it feels safe. The gazelle will shake and shiver and tremor. And they found out that every animal and every mammal and all of us have this built-in shaking, shivering, tremoring mechanism that seems to do two things. Okay. Number one, it seems to turn down or, you know, normalize the fight, flight, freeze, stress response. Again, that sentence kind of sounds, yeah, he said it, but actually if you're stuck and you're sick and you realize there's nothing in standard medicine, including really medications that seem to do that. I mean, I think this discovery by itself literally ought to get the Nobel Prize at some point. If you really understand the implication, it's shifting folks out of a chronic fight, flight, freeze, stress physiology. Now, the gazelle will shake, shiver, and tremor, and a few minutes later, it'll go back and just hang with the herd and graze and take care of its young, and it doesn't have PTSD, really, okay? The second thing, again, as I explained to patients this, you know, you can imagine 1 minute the gazelle's eating the grass and grazing, and then this cheetah's creeping up, and then bam, in a half a second, the gazelle's running 3 miles per hour and zigzagging, and there's a lot of charge and survival energy building up in its musculature. And the example I give is like, if I have a can of soda and you shake the can vigorously, and then there's a lot of pressure in the can. Now, obviously we don't want to just pull the lid off and spray diet soda all over my room. But what we do is just start cracking that lid and go tss, we start to slowly, safely depressurize the can. So when someone has a lot of survival energy, fight or flight energy built up in their musculature, if you don't release it, these areas that tend to keep clamping up and not letting go. Like we all have the experience, you go to a great massage therapist and they massage you and dig their elbow in and the muscles release. But then like a day or two later, you go back to your life and the muscles lock up again. That's a chronic myofascial tension and bracing pattern. So what these TRE tremors seem to do over time, you know, it's not a one-time cure. As the tremors move through the body, they start to unwind and release these tension and bracing patterns. Sometimes you do have to go slowly and safely if someone has a lot of trauma, because you don't want too much trauma released up to the to our conscious awareness too much. Okay. But over time, these TREs seem to give us a much bigger cup or plate or container. They do it both on shifting us out of that fight, flight, freeze stress state. And that diagram I showed of the polyvagal curve, they start to unfreeze the physiology. As I said, it healed me of 30 years of chronic fatigue. I have people write to me all the time that just have tried everything and nothing seems to help. And a lot of these people, if they do TRE and it is the missing link for them. And honestly, it just makes sense. You know, it's not me as some great brilliant dude who's healing them, but what I am doing is teaching them how to downregulate their physiology. And then I know the body's gonna tend to heal itself. And I know that as we do that, we might have some little hiccups in the road and then having to deal with some emotions that are not that comfortable. But yeah, it's fabulous. At the bottom of the slide, I've got the web address. It's traumaprevention.com. And I've got several YouTube videos that you can watch. You just look under my name. One is called TRE and Me. It's kind of a lot of the story that you heard today. The other is called How I Do TRE with Sensitive and Fragile Clients. And it kind of explains much of what we talked about today, the Porges curve and the need to go slow for folks that are really locked up and traumatized. And that is my presentation, Ms. Jana. So I'm going to get out of this slideshow, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. That was great. And I think it laid a very solid foundation for our audience to start to understand that, you know, these diagnoses or the, you know, these chronic pain experiences that we have that often become who we are. They become our personality and we don't even remember our life before them, or we can't even visualize what life could be in the future, you know, without them. And so, you know, the Porges curve, your analogy of the lion and the gazelle, I hope it's landing. It's almost like you're layering and layering and layering this foundation for us. And I know you've said it, and I also know that this week, as people are here at the Medicine of Mindset Summit, they're like sponges. They're absorbing and absorbing and absorbing. And so what would you say to someone if they're like, okay, I get it. What's my one inspired action that I can do today to start this process? Would it be watching that YouTube video? What would you say is a good place to start?
Yeah. So the TRE organization, Dr. Berselli, actually put out a video on YouTube that teaches how to do it. Another guy named Richmond Heath, who runs TRE Australia, has a really nice course for free. They can find it on the internet. I would just caution folks that, you know, one of the challenges with TRE is not that it doesn't work. It's that it can work very well at unfreezing the physiology. And, you know, it's just my bias because of the kind of the cohort of folks that I see in the office all day long are these sensitive and fragile types. I just urge people to go really, really slow. You know, you can always build up tremor times. And certainly if there's any trauma, maybe work with somebody. And if you have really severe trauma or some, you know, severe depression, bipolar, or something like that, you know, maybe work with a TRE provider who is also has a, you know, they're a licensed mental health professional. So, but I think the most bang for the buck for me is TRE. It may not be everything and all things for all men, but it's a really great tool.
I want to loop back to something that you said earlier, that when you were in your state of chronic fatigue and you were, you know, in medicine, you know, medical school, doing these long hours in your residency, and you were, you know, you were at 3%. How is this? So you use your TRE, like you said, if you 5X'd it at 15, that's, if you could 5X anything, right? Your health, your wealth, that's pretty good. Is this a practice that you've had to have? Like, it's not a, I've reached the destination, therefore I am. Is there like a maintenance program? Like once someone starts to unravel the big ball of yarn, maybe, you know, doing TRE, doing some myofascial, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
This become part of your lifestyle to ensure that you don't end back up in that FFF situation.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important for all of us to have some sort of self-care thing, whether that's TRE, whether it's tapping. You know, I mean, Nick Ortner has the Tapping Solution website, and there's a bunch of just tapping meditations one can go through, whether it's a yoga or Qigong practice, but it's just finding something. And I mean, I think as we evolve and clear trauma, I gotta say, I do believe that there's like a light at the end of the tunnel, that it's not, I'm just stuck in this and drowning. I think that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. In my case, I mean, I probably tremor at this point once every 1 or 2 weeks. I just don't need it as much. I'm, you know, way, way more functional now. But yeah, it's pick a self-care tool. Having a self-care tool is probably a lifelong thing, and you may evolve, you know, your needs may evolve over time.
So when you work with your clients and you kind of, you ebb and flow them through this journey, how do you notice, because we're here at the Medicine of Mindset Summit, what do you most notice when it comes to mindset? Are you noticing the way they speak, the way they carry them? Like what's changing about them as you take them through this process from a mindset perspective?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a doctor, so I can't put that aside. So I am actually noticing their physiology.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I know kind of where all those people are on that Porges polyvagal curve at any time. And I also notice as they're downregulating their physiology, they're more present. Some of the things they said, you notice like voice prosody. Are they talking very monotone, or their ups and down? Is there facial movement? Because when we're, you know, in that ventral vagal state, it goes to our facial muscles, and we're much more, you know, present with folks and wanting to be with people. So those are some of the things I listen to. Folks will tell me very, very commonly after TRE practice. First of all, before we actually do the TRE, I'll say scan your body and just notice where you're at now. And again, just even getting people like out of here and into their body is kind of a big thing. Notice what you notice. I don't care what they're noticing. I don't care if they say, I'm having the worst anxiety, the worst pain of my life. I'm going to say, good. Notice where you feel that inside. Notice those raw physical sensations. Can you allow them to be there? Because they're there right now anyway. And then we'll do that. A lot of times, just people being with the stuff they hate and don't like, even being with that junk, they take a deep breath. No one's ever asked them to do that before. They're constantly pushing it away. Okay. Then what I want to say next ties into something very important you said a minute ago. Then I'll ask them, can you notice a part of your body that feels the opposite, that feels calm, relaxed, safe in this moment? You know, no pain free in this moment. And, you know, so many of our clients get stuck in these mindsets. Or you could also, another way of saying it is these kind of well-developed neural pathways. And we're all really good at having deep ingrained neural pathways for feeling bad. Like my chronic pain folks, you know, or like a fibromyalgia patient, I might say, find a part of your body that doesn't hurt. And they're like, what are you talking about? All of me hurts. I'm like, no, let's sit here till you find a part that doesn't hurt. Now, after 5 minutes of them scanning themselves, they might realize it's the little toe on their right foot that doesn't hurt. But you know what? I will take that. That's a huge start. I want them to start developing new neural pathways for feeling different and better. And the only way you do that is by focusing on what feels different and better. And it may be only 1% of your body or something like that. And they'll notice the part that hurts. And I want them to start shifting their awareness and attention to the part that doesn't. Shifting attention back and forth. Now, a lot of times people are like, why would I want to shift away from the pain? You know, how's it ever going to get better if I take my tension away? They realize what you focus on keeps making a kind of a deeper scratch in the record. So you want to feel different and better, spend some time focusing on things that make you feel different and better. It can feel very unnatural at first, but that is actually a key to the mindset. I think, yeah, that's an absolute key, is spend some time. It can be a gratitude practice. Spend some time focusing on things that make you feel happy, expansive, gracious, and it can feel very unnatural, but it's an amazing practice to do.
And I think the other thing that I want to kind of pull from what you're saying is all of these suggestions and these tools involve choice, right? We have to, as the doctor, you can prescribe them and you can, you know, tell your metaphors and you can, you know, share stories of successes, but until we go within to take that inspired action, you know, it's hard to move in that direction. And so for those, you know, again, I keep referring to, for those people who are here today listening to this, it's not a coincidence that you're, you know, that you carved out the time for this specific interview. And, you know, on one of my earlier interviews, one of the docs defined a miracle. He said, "Do you know what the definition of miracle is?" And I was like the dictionary definition. And he said, "A miracle is just something that happens that's unexpected," right? So if you're sitting here and you're feeling like, what am I hearing, or it's resonating for you, and maybe you're feeling something in your gut, or maybe you're getting a little bit, you know, hot or sweaty just listening to the fact that you can make these changes, listen to your body. I think the body's a brilliant communicator. I just don't think we didn't come with instructions on how to listen to it. And what you've presented today is fantastic. And so I want to know, based on, you know, your years of training and expertise, and probably by now the tens of thousands of lives that you've impacted, what do you feel is not being talked about enough when it comes to, you know, your practice and where you draw your line in the sand?
Yeah. So what I think is important, there's a few things that are important. I think, as you just said, it's really important to spend a little bit of time every day, no matter how difficult it is, focusing on something that helps us make new neural pathways for feeling different and better and happy and grateful. You know, that is enormously helpful. I would say that, you know, it's interesting, when we used to teach these before the pandemic, we teach these big TRE classes at my medical center. There were doctors and nurses and some patients that show up. And the most common word people had to describe what was happening as a result of the TRE was the word hope. And so it shifted people enough, like they knew, maybe they didn't know how, but something felt different. It allowed that little, as you said, that little miracle, that little slip in their consciousness, a slip somewhere that allowed them to start seeing and feeling like they could do something different. And again, you know, I just keep going back to if we shift our physiology, that I think it makes it easier for a lot of us to have to kind of set our mindset and set that direction a little bit easier.
I love it. And so I've been asking this next question of all of our guests on the Medicine of Mindset Summit. Would you allow us access into your own, some of the personal, you know, obviously you shared that TRE is still a part after all these years, it's a tried and true, you know, tool for you. What are some of the other, you know, mindset or the choices you make to nurture your mindset?
Yeah. A few things, just in no specific order. I meditate pretty regularly. I do Qigong pretty regularly. I'm studying with a school called Flowing Zen Qigong, that I think is kind of a nice trauma-informed Qigong school. I do block therapy. I think we both do that. What else do I do? You know, I walk pretty regularly and do some other kind of workout stuff. And another one that's a biggie for me that I love, after having written a couple books on, co-authored a couple books on energy healing, what I love, love, and love is the Donna Eden 5-minute in the morning energy routine. That thing is awesome. It just resets kind of the body's energy, and I love that. and I will ground. I'm a big fan of grounding. We live in Southern California, so fortunately, most of the months of the year, I can just go outside in the grass and just stand there. And I'll tell you, I really feel the effects of that. Well, first of all, our whole hospital's on, you know, it's computerized now, and the ORs have so much equipment and EMFs, and the grounding has been really helpful for that too. So that's kind of a nutshell of the stuff that I do.
Sorry, did you say, can you tell me, it was Donna E-A-T-O-N or E-D?
No, I'm Donna Eden. It's E-D-E-N.
Okay, perfect.
And it's the 5 minute, her 5 minute in the morning routine. It's on, you can find it on YouTube and her website and stuff, but it's fabulous.
Oh, Dr. Eric, this has been so fascinating. I love how you set the stage with the content and how you shared it was so, you made it available, I think, to, you know, a regular person like me that doesn't have, you know, the MD letters behind their name. So I first want to thank you for that. And if people want to connect with you, with your work, how was the best place to do that?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, I don't really have any products or services that I sell. As you know, I'm just kind of in there in the trenches doing the work.
Yeah.
I'm not really seeing private clients now. I've got some YouTube videos. Those are a good place to start. I've got a website, I think it's Dr. Eric Robbins, but it's got some contact information, but I don't know. Maybe someday I'll form a big organization and have some of that.
Well, and the other way, gang, those of you that are here, if you go to, we have all the bios of our speakers, all right, in linked through the Medicine of Mindset page.
Yeah.
So just go there. There's a lot of the books that Dr. Eric has written or has co-authored. So if you love what you experienced over these past, 60 minutes, dive into some of his work that way as well. I think that's another really great way to connect.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. This was so fantastic. Thank you for, again, thanks for saying yes to this project, for showing up the way you did today, and for leaving us with all of this amazing information.
Jana, thank you so much for having me. And it was a privilege.
You're welcome. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for, we're going to wrap this call. It's time for a little bit of a stretch break. Get your body moving, get some diaphragmatic breathing going, and we'll see you back here on the next episode at the Medicine of Mindset Summit.